Chapter 6. Van Helsing could see the wooden box sitting in the centre of the room. He nodded to his companions as they stepped forward to remove the lid of the coffin. Van Helsing was an observer, watching as the two men slew the most murderous fiend who ever lived.
"Now that Dracula is dead, my friends, scrape up his remains, and I will take them to a place that no one will find him," Van Helsing said, as Quincy quickly scooped up Dracula's remains and placed them in an urn.
"Very good. Now I will take them where no one will ever find this evil fiend."
The loud crashing noise tore Van Helsing from his deep, coma-like sleep. On reflex, he jumped from his little cot that normally served as the bed for the great detective Sherlock Holmes. Van Helsing grabbed his crossbow and tore open the door leading to the small inner sitting room. Holmes had given up his bed for the extremely worn-out vampire hunter, and he had taken a chair in front of the fire. Van Helsing knew in his gut something happened, because the whole cabin shook from the noise that awoke him so violently.
"Holmes!" shouted Van Helsing, as he ran into the sitting area where he had left Holmes only a few hours before.
"Oh, dear Lord!" Van Helsing uttered, as he stood gaping at a giant hole in the wall that had once been Holmes' dining area.
Van Helsing threw the front door open and ran outside into the night and onto the porch of the small cabin.
"There you are, Van Helsing," said an evil voice from a monstrous vampire that was floating 10 feet above the ground,
held up by flapping its huge wings, making a thunderous sound as it did so. Once his eyes adjusted, he could see Holmes dangling in the air in front of the monster, held by his throat. The monster held Holmes up against its own body, using Holmes as a shield against Van Helsing's dead-eye crossbow.
"Go ahead, Van Helsing, you must shoot this foul creature," Holmes demanded. "You cannot let it continue to pollute humanity,"
Holmes said, but trailed off at the end of his sentence due to the crushing force on his throat. The creature's eyes widened, and at that same moment it lost its grip on the detective, and he fell to the ground. Van Helsing had not grasped what had happened exactly. He did not have time enough to draw his cross when the creature shouted,
"The master lives!"
and with those words took straight off into the night sky. Holmes gathered himself as he pulled his old body off the ground.
"Did you hear that?" asked Holmes, bringing himself up to his feet.
"Yes, Dracula lives. They found his remains. I was so careful. I set traps, but somehow, some way, someone got to him," Van Helsing said, with a panic-stricken voice. "I have to go," Van Helsing said, turning back toward the cabin.
"Wait, I am going with you," Holmes said, following behind the vampire hunter.
"I cannot, in all good conscience, ask you to do this. This will interrupt your retirement. I have brought enough misfortunes to you, my friend," Van Helsing said, turning toward the detective.
"Nonsense! Besides, I do not have the strength to repair that hole the beast left in my house anyway. So, let's make haste. The game is afoot!"
Holmes shouted, pushing past the vampire hunter and darting into the cabin to make himself ready. Holmes immediately walked over to the wooden trunk that sat at the end of his bed. He opened it and reached in and pulled out a nicely folded plaid Inverness coat and flung it over his right arm, then slid his left arm in. He then took out an old deerstalker cap, untied the top to let the side flaps fall so he could keep his ears warm in the cold night air.
"Okay, I have a carriage behind the cabin," Holmes said, rushing out, pulling a drawer open on his desk and pulling out his revolver, dropping it into his coat pocket.
Then he immediately rushed out the front door. Holmes threw the barn doors back, revealing 2 nice thoroughbred horses and a small carriage.
"Grab the horses. I will make ready the carriage," Holmes said, rushing inside.
The darkened alley hid all sorts of evils as Dracula sat trying to gather the thoughts in his head. Being dead for an evil being is not pleasant, and being ripped back into life, well, that's even worse.
"Who is this person you say brought me back?" Dracula asked Eric as he stood watching the city street.
"She was a countess, in one lifetime anyway," the phantom said as he looked back at the vampire.
Dracula's body was weak from being torn into reality. His mind was jumbled. The adrenaline he used to make himself into fog back at the crypt was now gone.
"Where's the headless one gone?"
asked the vampire, as he wrapped the cloak around his half-covered body.
"He has gone back to wherever it is he goes, until we need him again," Eric said, as he remained watchful.
My body is weak. I need sustenance, the vampire said.
What is that sound? Eric said, at the sound of what seemed to be thunder. But it was a constant noise. It was followed by screaming and the sounds of running footfalls in the streets.
My children have come to me, Dracula said, as he stood looking towards the sky.
He shot a glance towards Eric.
Tonight we feed. Tomorrow we meet this countess of which you speak, said Dracula.
As the sky began to grow dark with the bodies of giant bat-like creatures, the creatures began dropping in the alleyway around Eric and the vampire. The streets were quickly filling up with the evil monsters, all of which began dropping to one knee.
My master, you are alive,
one of the creatures said, as it bowed low to the king vampire.
Yes, my children, I am, and tonight feast and drink until you are content, the count said.
And then his glance turned toward Eric.
I have no need of you any more, the vampire said to the phantom as he grinned to show two large fangs.
Eric immediately drew his sword, along with a wooden stake.
I have brought you back from the grave, and rest assured I can send you back, Eric said, full of confidence.
The vampire turned and lifted his arms.
We hide no longer, children. Go and feed.
As soon as he said these words, the beasts all left the ground, grabbing humans from the streets.
You and you,
Dracula said, pointing a finger at two of the creatures that remained standing in the alleyway.
Go and bring me the head of Van Helsing and the Harkers, and everyone else that aided in my demise, he said, lowering his arm.
Yes, my master,
the two evil creatures said, as they flew high into the air.
Now, masked men, what was it you and I were discussing?
The vampire said, looking back at his new masked prey.
We have to get to the tomb where I placed the vampire, but we will need a boat, Van Helsing said,
as the carriage raced down the old dirt path, cutting through the darkness.
I have an idea. I know of an old ship captain that frequents a tavern in town, Holmes said, as he pushed the horses through the cold, dark night.
The carriage made its way into the street of the small village. The town appeared to be deserted, as most places were shut down at this hour of the morning.
Actually, we might have to find his ship instead, Holmes said, as he looked at all of the darkened buildings.
What on earth is that noise? Holmes asked, as he looked up toward the night sky.
Get into the thicket, Van Helsing said, as he reached into his sack for his crossbow.
Holmes raced the horses onward to the outer edge of the town.
Oh, good Lord, here comes another carriage, right for us, Holmes shouted, as he tried to turn his team.
However, the other carriage had the same idea. Holmes felt the carriage wheel leave the ground as it started to overturn. He leaped as fast as his 60-year-old body would let him. As his body twisted in midair, he could see one of the creatures had hold of the carriage, manhandling it like it was a child's toy. Holmes landed hard, but he had fallen many times before, and he knew how to land without much injury. He rolled onto his back after coming to a stop. He could see the other carriage had also been overturned. Holmes could hear Van Helsing's bow let loose an arrow as he got to his feet and made it around the upturned carriage. Van Helsing had exhausted the crossbow and was now at the mercy of the female vampire.
Van Helsing, do not worry. The master does not want you. Only your head,
she said, with an evil hissing voice.
But first, I just want a little taste,
she said, as she opened wide her mouth. Her eyes dimmed, all at once, as if someone had turned a lamp off behind them. Her mouth dropped open with a look of surprise as her head rolled from her shoulders to the ground.
Hola, señores. May I ask what on earth was that creature? Said the Spanish nobleman, as he held the bloody sword with which he used to save Van Helsing's life. A vampire, and there is another one around here somewhere, of that I am sure,
Van Helsing said, standing to his feet immediately. He pushed a stake through the heart of the vampire.
The heart. That is the only way to ensure the creature's death, Van Helsing said, looking at the elaborately dressed Spaniard. Thank you, sir. Your timing could not have been better. I am Sherlock Holmes, and this is my associate, Abraham Van Helsing, said Holmes, walking up to the Spanish nobleman with hand extended.
The Sherlock Holmes? I must say I have read of your exploits even in my former home of California, said the nobleman.
Oh, please excuse me. My name is Diego,
Diego de la Vega, but please call me Diego, Diego said. So what brings you all the way out here? Holmes asked, as he looked Diego over.
Oh, retirement. I promised myself I would see as much of the world in my later years as I could, but I never imagined I would find such creatures as this here, he said, looking at the pile of dust that was once a monster.
Diego de la Vega was of a noble breed. He attended the finest schools abroad and returned home, and after Mexico's War of Independence, he settled down where his people were under suppression by Spanish rule. So he disguised himself as Zorro to protect his people, and he fought for years on their behalf until the Mexican army finally won over his homeland and pushed out the Spaniards. Once Zorro was no longer needed, he began to travel the world over. Now a man of nearly 70 years of age, he was as healthy and as spry as ever.
I am sorry, but we must be heading back to find the leader of these creatures before this epidemic spreads throughout the world, Van Helsing said.
But, senor, your carriage is badly damaged. Come, we will take mine, Diego said, with his fox-like grin that usually adorned his face.
Chapter 7 Inverness-shire was dark and quiet for the two travellers seeking solace, but they could hardly find any. One sits asleep, given an injection to calm him into a deep coma, the other sitting at his desk writing, when the sounds of screams coming through the thin walls caught his attention and interrupted his thoughts. Dr. Jekyll ran to the window to see what the commotion could possibly be about. As he threw back the curtains, he stepped back in horror as he watched large creatures flying through the streets, tearing people from their homes. People who were sound asleep, now wide awake and facing a living nightmare. Dear gracious, what on earth is happening? Jekyll said, turning from the window to make sure his friend was still sleeping. He heard the glass shatter, then hands upon his shoulders as he was pulled backwards into the night sky. He had spent years trying to suppress Mr. Hyde, and so far he had pretty good control over him. However, tonight, for the first time, he needed his alter ego to be loosed, if only to save both Larry and his own life. He closed his eyes as the giant claw-like hands clutched him tight, breaking the flesh beneath his clothing as it dug its claws into his shoulder. It flew higher in the air. He did not know if he could summon Hyde or not. In the beginning it took a potion, but of late Hyde just seemed to happen. The creature started to feel the weight of her captive changing. He was getting heavier. This had never happened before. Looking down to examine its prey a little closer caused the monster to turn loose of Dr. Jekyll, as his appearance seemed to be changing right before the vampire's very eyes. His arms began to swell to 5 times Jekyll's normal size, ripping the shirt sleeves to shreds. As his face contorted, his hair grew to shoulder length. His weight became too much for the flying creature to hold as the monster decided to let loose of its catch. Hyde quickly grabbed the flying beast by the arm.
"Well, aren't you a nasty-looking critter?" Hyde said, pulling hard on the vampire's arm.
The creature let go once Hyde's huge fist began pounding hard on the vampire's abdomen. The streets below were filling up with people, running from their homes in terror. When Hyde hit the street, some of the cobblestone cracked under his enormous weight, but Hyde was unhurt as he peered around him to witness the chaos. He glanced up at the window from which his alter ego was pulled and witnessed one of the vampires entering the open hole that was left in his room.
"I wouldn't mess with him if I were you," shouted Hyde with a chuckle. "Or on second thought, wake the old fleabag and let's have some real fun," he said as he stood to his feet.
Larry lay quiet and sleeping when the vampire entered the room. The vampire had already transformed himself into its human form, curious as to this one and why he was not running in terror like the rest of the cowardly humans. He approached the sleeping man, drawing his sharp fangs from their resting place, making more of a sport with this one than the others. He drew close to the helpless man. When he reached his vulnerable neck, he sunk his teeth deep into Larry's neck. Larry's eyes flung open, as if they were spring-loaded. The moon and all its fullness shone in on him. The vampire immediately recoiled and spat out the blood it had started to consume.
"You're not human!" the vampire shouted.
The scent was not human at all. The vampire jumped to the ceiling and sprouted its wings. Larry raised straight out of the bed, his arms and legs contorting. It had been years since the beast was set free, and now it felt good. The howl was loud enough for all the vampires terrorizing the little town to stop and take notice. Moments later, a vampire came tearing through the wall of Larry's room, making the hole much bigger. The werewolf clutched onto the flying creature, tearing at his shoulder and neck like a rabid dog. The vampire, not being able to sustain the weight of the wolf, especially with the wolf's claws tearing at one of its wings, they both hit the ground, which only caused more panic in the streets. The vampires all stopped to look at what they had unknowingly unleashed. Hyde stood in the middle of the street. A smile covered his deformed face.
"Okay, Pooch, it's chow time," he said, as he grabbed one of the vampires and began to pound on its head.
The wolf sprung high into the air, grabbing another winged creature, dragging it to the ground.
"Enough!"
shouted a voice from above. At the sound of the mighty voice, all of the vampires ceased and backed away from their victims. Dracula floated down toward the street as if on a cloud.
"You cannot be serious. A freak and a dog? That is what is holding up my army from destroying every living thing in this town? We are vampires."
"Excuse me," Hyde said as he approached the vampire.
"I resent being called a freak,"
Hyde said as he drew back a fist to hit the leader. Dracula was much faster than Hyde. He caught Hyde's hand in mid-punch. Hyde had fought many men, but the grip this vampire had was much stronger than anything he'd ever encountered before. In fact, it caught Hyde off guard. Dracula instantly drew Hyde in close to his body.
"You and your mutt are of no use to me," Dracula said, as he flung Hyde over his shoulder high into the air.
Hyde came down hard through the trees, catching every branch on his way down. Then Dracula turned his attention to the wolf.
"And what of you?"
Dracula asked, as he looked toward the sky.
"Tear the wolf apart," Dracula said, as he vanished into a fog.
Deep inside his mind, Larry knew the situation in which he was placed. Dracula had unleashed an evil apocalypse on everything that stood in his way, and Larry was no exception. He knew he could handle 2, maybe 3 vampires at once, but not an army. Jekyll was violently awakened at the sound of his friend's howls. He tried to pull himself to his feet, but his body hurt badly. He looked above him at all of the broken tree branches. His face still showed the scarring from the fall.
"Hyde, what have you done?"
Jekyll thought, as he made his way to his feet. He could still hear his friend growling. As he made it to the clearing of the town street, he could see it more clearly. The vampires were flying and tearing at his friend like animals tearing at a deer carcass. Without fear for his own well-being, Dr. Jekyll ran to his friend's aid. Chapter 8.
"Turn off the machine!"
Professor Moriarty yelled. Griffin had done as he was told, and once again the machine fell silent. The professor immediately listened for a heartbeat by laying his head on the creature's chest.
"Well?"
Griffin asked impatiently. The creature was once created of beauty. His hair, that was once long and black and flowed with breezes, now was almost gone due to sub-zero temperatures. His teeth, that were once described as pearly white, were now rotted and breaking away. The extreme coldness gave the creature a bluish tint to his flesh. His eyes were sunken inside his head. They were dark. His lips were like 2 black slits. His nose was misshapen from the years of abuse before his death. Now another mad scientist sought to revive the thing dubbed Frankenstein's monster.
"Father!"
came a loud scream from the belly of the beast. The professor and Griffin both jumped almost out of their clothing. The monster pulled hard on the bonds that held him.
"Easy, you are among friends," the professor said as he approached the confused monster.
Giant arms pulled hard against the restraints. The sound of leather tearing filled the air. The professor took 2 steps back and turned to Griffin, but he had already left a pile of clothing on the floor while disappearing into his invisible state. Professor Moriarty could feel the hot breath on his neck. He knew the monster was now free. Afraid to turn and face the creature, not knowing what state the monster's mind would be in.
"Why have you brought me?"
the monster began, but stopped as if he forgot the words. Why have I brought you back? Asked the professor, now turning to face the confused monster. Because I can make you human, Moriarty said, placing a hand on the confused monster's face. I will be your father, and you will be my son, said the doctor, as he looked into the eyes of the beast. Part 2 Chapter 9 Sunrise. Her room was kept dark. She claimed the sun hurt her eyes. She slept sound. She heard nothing, especially the fog that crept in through the closed shutters of her bedchamber. She could not feel the fog as it crept up underneath her warm bed coverings. She could not feel it sliding over her bare feet. She was still a very beautiful woman. Her auburn hair lay all about her head as she slept. Her figure was like that of a young woman. She was what every man dreamed about but could never obtain. The fog filled the sheets of the sleeping woman slowly as it moved up to her beautiful head, as it began to take shape into that of a man. His arms formed around the thin waist of the Countess. His head took shape on the pillow beside hers. In only a moment, Countess Elizabeth Bathory awoke, with dagger in her hand, turning to her intruder, who grabbed her wrist mid-air.
Why do you desire to take the life of the one you worked so hard to resurrect?
Dracula asked, looking deep into her eyes.
What do you want from me?
Dracula said, not removing his stare.
I want to live forever, she said, dagger still in her hand.
It is a lonely life, he said, as his face drew closer to hers.
Not if we have each other, she said, dropping the blade and throwing her arms around Dracula, pressing her lips to his as hard as she could. I want you to bite me, she whispered in his ear, as their bodies began to tangle into each other.
Now is not the time, my dear. But please, rest assured you will become like me. But for now, my body will have to suffice, he said, as he pressed his lips against hers once again.
The Countess had been waiting her whole life for this very moment, and now she had the man she loved beside her in her arms. Her whole being ached for him, and he only wanted to give her all that she wanted of him and more. The passion could be felt even to the ends of the earth. All the vampires that were now in hiding for fear of the sun could feel all that Dracula, their master, was feeling. And even though these creatures had no life of humanity left in them, they could feel the passion between Dracula and his lover.